This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
One bucket to keep its season alive. Gillespie from the out of bounds to the freshman queen who's driving, floats it.
Hey!
Maryland on the right side of a buzzer beater with life into the Sweet 16.
We're back live with more Rami Metlaw on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Lisa Byington with on CBS as Maryland gets the buzzer beater and advances to the Sweet 16. Rami Metlaw with you on The Score Evening Show until 9 o'clock. Major League Baseball schedule makers absolutely hate the Chicago Cubs. We'll get into that a little bit later in this. The more I look into it, the more brutal it is as for the Cubs, the way that they start the season. But we'll get into that a little bit later in this hour. Joining me now to talk some NCAA tournament. You hear him on Bet Sweats on the BetMGM Network. You can also follow him on Twitter at SPShoot. Pleasure to welcome in Sammy P on the Circus Sports Hotline. Circus Sports Illinois. Download the Circus Sports app today. Sammy, how are you this evening, my man?
Rami, doing well. Good to hear from you. I was at Circa last Thursday. It was jammed. You couldn't move. Yeah, we went out to Vegas. We stayed at MGM, and we did our thing out there and bounced around Mandalay Bay over the weekend. But I like to hit all the spots, and Circa is a monstrosity for watching sports with your buddies and betting on games. But you couldn't even breathe in that place. That's how packed it was, and that's what people do, right? It's been a tradition for so many Americans. Yep. They get together, they fly with their boys. A lot of people started doing it in their early 20s, and I was sitting next to a group of guys at Circa that said it was their 30th year in a row going to Vegas together. And believe it or not, three of the four guys were divorced. Surprise, right?
Oh, crazy. That's wild, Sammy. That's wild that those guys. I was just going to say, I can't get my friends together for one trip, much less one every year for 30 years. But you just told me why, because they're all happily married, and I hope soon to be, Sammy. So that's why we can't get this thing together, because we don't want to end up like those guys, I think is the reason.
Yeah, it's certainly a trip that is more difficult the older you get. I used to love going down 21, 2, 3, 4 and, you know, could hang out all day and be fine. But now, I mean, we flew back Sunday and I'm still catching up on sleep. But great trip, great times. Made some money, which is always an extra exclamation point at the end. And now we're down to the final 16 teams. Not really an upset-laden tournament. I mean, Arkansas is your biggest Cinderella, and they're an SEC team. But I do think it makes for good games Thursday and Friday.
Yeah, our guys, Spiegelman Holmes from the afternoon show, are flying out tomorrow to do some shows from Circa in Las Vegas. How is your bracket looking, Sammy? Before we get into the upsets and the Cinderellas and how this tournament has gone, how is Sammy P's bracket?
It's a good question. I haven't looked. I know I still have three of the four teams in the final four. That much I know. I did. I went crazy bottom right. I put Gonzaga far. Not great, but I still have, what do you know? I have all the one seeds left. I've got Duke, Auburn, and Florida, but I do think Florida's a little vulnerable. That's a team that just closed so hot and has only lost one game since the 1st of February. A very sexy team, and as we know, they win the SEC tournament. A lot of people put them far. It's going to be a tough game against Maryland, and then the Gators win that one. Let's say that happens. Then they get Texas Tech, ideally, and that's a tough two-team parlay. So I wouldn't be surprised if Florida gets knocked off, and then we only have Duke and Auburn in the Final Four, but you're going to see a lot of chalk, I think. You usually, this time in the tournament, Rami, you see a lot of favorites flex their muscles. And in terms of the point spread, people are going to take Michigan. They're going to take a big number. Oh, that's a big number, 8.5, 9, and then Auburn wins big, and then the other one. I mean, you're going to see a lot of love for people taking 9-10 points against Duke. They're going to see that number with Arizona, and they're going to talk themselves into a big point spread. And this is historically the time of the tournament where you see the teams like Duke and Auburn just win by 20-plus. It's inevitable that we get the burnout for the teams that maybe are playing a little bit deeper than they should, and oftentimes that's never good when we get in that second week.
Do you look at the remaining teams in this tournament, or maybe at the start of the tournament, as it's just Duke and then everyone else, or is there a team that can compete with them?
Well, Houston is very good. I like Auburn, even though they weren't as sexy as I think a lot of people thought they were a couple months ago, because they did lose 3 of 4 coming into the dance. But, you know, Duke could win it. Houston could win it. Florida, Auburn. I'd probably draw the line there. Maybe Texas Tech. I'm not a big fan of their defense. But it does feel like it's one of four teams: Duke, Houston, Florida, Auburn, and that's not exactly a hot take. They're all number one seeds. I don't think there's a lot of teams below the one line that are well rounded enough to win 4 more games. I'm just not there. But then you look at, you know, you watch the selection show and you see Jay Billis has all number ones and Clark Kellogg has 3 number ones in the Final Four. And it just kind of feels like that type of year. And I'll tell you another thing, you know, a lot of these teams at the top, you know, the Houstons, the Floridas, the Auburns, they have a lot of mid-major transfers. The rich are just getting so much richer in this sport. And I know people love upsets in the tournament, but the problem is all these teams that are 13, 14, 15, 16 seeds, if any of those teams have players that have a pulse, they go to Auburn or they go to Houston, you know? So I don't think there's a team sub the one line that's good enough to win the title. And that might tell you a lot about, you know, the status of the sport, where the rich are just getting richer and the weaker teams are getting weaker.
Yeah, do you think that the NIL and the transfer portal, and we're seeing it play out this year with fewer Cinderella teams that we've seen before, but could this be, I don't want to say the death of the NCAA tournament or March Madness, because you just talked about how popular it is and Circa and all the casinos are packed when it happens, but what does this do to the NCAA tournament, do you think, if this trend continues and we see fewer and fewer Cinderellas because of these factors that you're talking about?
It's funny you ask that, because the same conversation floats up every year. Should we expand the field to 128? Yeah. I'm like, great, let's add 60 plus more teams that can't win it. That's exactly what we want. It'll make more money for the NCAA. That much is obvious. And it'll give more people an opportunity to go to a tournament game as a reporter and get screamed at by a security guard for not putting your Coca-Cola in a Powerade cup, which has happened to me many times. Why do you not have that in a Powerade glass? I'm like, chill, what? Dude, chill. If you go to a game as a reporter and you get any beverage, whether it be water or a pop or whatever, and you walk out with just the can or the bottle, you get berated by security because everything must go in a Powerade-labeled cup on the floor. That's crazy.
That's
wild. But that's... Yeah, it's like, you know, I'm 24 years old. Can you tell I'm over it from 15 years ago? getting berated by some guy in the alleyway because I don't have my Coca-Cola in a Powerade glass. But I don't think expansion is what the sport needs. I think once you start paying players, and we've had a few seasons of this now, the bigger teams are only going to get stronger and wealthier. And it's not a fair fight. If a player has to choose between, you know, a team like Michigan State or a team like Ohio, where are they going to go? Where are they going to get paid more? Where are they going to be playing on TV more? It's an easy answer. So I think the middle class is slowly dying. And I'm talking about college basketball, not in the country. but I just think it's never been harder to be in mid-major. And I mean, you watch the games. How many nice upsets did we have? And I'll give you Arkansas over St. John's, but mm-hmm. I mean, that's an SEC team. The only one that really stands out is the McNeese over Clemson. Like, that was the only mid-major to really show us anything. And that's not good for people that like to watch upsets.
You know, and I know this will never happen because money. But let's say I make Sammy P of Bet Sweats on the BetMGM network, the commissioner of the NCAA, and you're putting together the tournament. They keep talking about expanding the tournament. Would you shrink the field if you had overriding power of the NCAA tournament and the way things are going right now? Would you shrink the field in some way?
I don't know that I'd shrink it. I mean, the play-in games are irrelevant to me. You know, a team right. that wins a game like that usually doesn't make a run. We've seen UCLA win a playoff game and then play-in game, rather, and then go to the Final Four. I don't know that I would shrink it, but I certainly wouldn't add. I mean, this is a conversation that we can have with people much smarter than me, but I just wonder if there's a way to mitigate the playing field by giving the power teams sort of a salary cap. I don't know the answer to leveling the playing field, and you're never going to completely level it.
Right.
But I'm just looking through the bracket right now. I mean, aside from, McNeese, bottom right, beats Clemson, 12 over a 5. Top right, no upsets. Top left, New Mexico beats Marquette, but that was a coin flip game. And then bottom left, okay, Colorado State. But Colorado State was favored in the game. So, I mean, okay, Drake. Drake beats Missouri. So two freaking upsets in the first weekend, Drake over Missouri and McNeese over Clemson. That's it. And I don't think there's a blueprint for these teams in the middle to get better going forward. And we'll see how that plays out. But it's never been tougher to be in the middle of the pack, man. That much is clear.
I didn't hear you mention Arkansas while we're on the subject of Cinderellas and upsets. I didn't hear you mention Arkansas and the teams you thought could get through to the championship. You think their Cinderella run ends on Thursday night when they take on Texas Tech?
Probably. They've played two teams that can't score. Kansas can't shoot or score. I don't want to dismiss what they've done. And I think one of the funnier storylines of the tournament, Rami, is the fact that Kentucky gets bounced last year in the first round with Coach Cal. The two sides go their separate ways, and now Kentucky and Arkansas are in the Sweet 16, right? And so is BYU, Mark Pope's former team. Mark Pope is now coaching at Kentucky. So all three of those teams are in the Sweet 16, which is a wild story. But after beating Kansas, then they get St. John's, a team that was shooting 30% from three, and 70% at the foul line. And it just can't shoot, man. So I think aesthetically, Arkansas does a lot of things well against teams that love the rock fights, the brick fests. But now you got to take on a Texas Tech team that's, you know, fifth in the country in offense and top 30 in a lot of offensive metrics. So if they fall behind, it's going to be a long game. I sort of liken Arkansas to the Pittsburgh Steelers. You better go up early and sit on that lead, because if you fall behind, you don't have the fireworks to catch up.
I want to ask you about one of the off-the-court stories coming out of this tournament. Literally off the court while he was leaving the court after they were eliminated from the NCAA tournament. Dan Hurley was caught on a reporter's phone just absolutely going off on the ref, saying things I can't say here on the air, Sammy. And he reportedly will be fined $20,000 and write an apology letter to the NCAA and Todd Golden, the referee who he referred to. What did you make of that whole situation? I feel like that's the type of thing a coach might often say when they're walking off the court in the heat of battle. This one just happened to get caught on camera.
That's going to be a real dent in his $32 million extension, huh? Yeah. How much is it? $20,000?
Yeah, something like that.
$20,000?
Yeah. Yep.
Wow. Woo, he's going to feel that one. I mean, it's a lot of money to guys like me, but I don't think it's going to affect his life. And look, I worked in college athletics for almost a decade. He ain't writing that letter. There's no way. He's going to sign it, but he's not going to write it. He's just not a sincere guy, and that's okay. I think the world has room for heels, for villains, and he is a villain, and that's fine. I mean, that we've seen a lot of people in a lot of different mediums and platforms be very popular for being the bad guy. Razor Ramon comes to mind. I mean, who's better than him at being
the bad guy? Yeah,
who's the bad guy? So fine, you want to find the guy 20 grand off of his $50 million contract with a $32 million extension, whatever. He's not sorry. I shouldn't speak for him. I don't think he's sorry. But he's just a sore loser, man. I mean, you know, he's chirping at fans every time they win and talking smack to reporters and talking down on everybody. And then the first time they lose in 3 years, he's like, oh, the refs screwed us. We don't want to hear that, man. We don't want to hear that.
That is Sammy P. Catch him on Bet Sweats on the BetMGM Network. Follow him on Twitter at SPShoot. And my guest for the last few minutes on the Circus Sports Hotline, presented by Circus Sports Illinois. Download the Circus Sports app today. Sammy, appreciate the time and the insight and the free plug for Circus Sports. Free first-hand experience endorsement of Circus Sports right here on The Score. Always appreciate you, man.
You got it, buddy. Hey, we did bet Ole Miss +3.5 on Friday. I will leave you with that, and I will now hang up. Thanks for having me.
There you go. Leaves you with a little knowledge. Drops a little knowledge on you on his way out to maybe make a few bucks on the NCAA tournament. We'll hit a quick break. On the other side, I was digging a little bit more during our last commercial break on this Cubs schedule for the first month, man. And oh my God, what did they do to the schedule makers? We'll discuss right after this. Rami Makhlouf, Score Evening Show, right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Optimize your nutrition this year with Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal service. Factor's fresh, never-frozen meals are dietitian-approved, ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from 40 weekly options across 8 dietary preferences like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Eat smarter at factormeals.com/listen50 and use code LISTEN50 for 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. Factormeals.com/listen50, code LISTEN50.
I'm Emma Grade, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Grade, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Grade, an Odyssey podcast, available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back live with more Rami Makhlouf on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
You know, opening day is a very special thing. It's kind of funny the Cubs feel like we have like 4 opening days this year between Japan, Arizona, Sacramento's opening day, our opening day. It's like so much goes on just before we get back to Wrigley. It's a unique setup, but a lot of cool stuff along the way.
There's Nico Horner on the Marquee Sports Network talking about how the Cubs are starting this season. What's fair to expect from the Cubs in their first month of play? 312-644-6767. Guess what? Open phone lines the rest of this show. We talked with Sammy P of the BetMGM Network. We talked with Sam Monson of the 33rd Team. Now the rest of the show is you and me at 312-644-6767. If you want to get in on some Cubs discussion, what is fair? What are you expecting from the Cubs in the first month of the season? And I'll tell you why I'm asking that in just a second, but I was remiss and when we were talking to Sammy P to tell you that the tournament is down to 16 teams and College Hoops coverage on The Score is brought to you by Bet365. So now with that out of the way, I was saying last week, I was on the air on this very show on Friday, and I was kind of being the stick in the mud, the wet blanket, whatever you want to call it, saying, I know everybody had a real good time with that series in Tokyo, and I get it, and I'm not here to tell anybody what they should or should not enjoy. I just didn't like it very much. I don't want to get up at 5 in the morning to watch baseball or anything. I just don't want to get up at 5 in the morning. Like that's the bottom line there. And I didn't think it was good for the Cubs. These guys are pro athletes that are, you know, they're creatures of habit and routine, and they thrive on that more in baseball than maybe any other sport. And I'm going to get into some of the details of the schedule and what's going to make it so hard here in just 1 second, as I'm asking you, what are you expecting? What's fair to expect from the Cubs in the first month? But reading a piece at The Athletic today by Sahadev Sharma about the Cubs and the challenges that this odd schedule presents for them, specifically for their pitching staff. And man, I was reading these quotes from Tommy Hotovy, their pitching coach, and just a knot in my stomach, just getting tighter and tighter as I was reading it and what all this could mean about the Cubs and how they start the season. Bear with me for a segment that we call here on the Score Evening Show, Rami Reads, as I read you some comments from Tommy Hotovy and the challenges that this weird schedule presents for the Chicago Cubs and their pitching staff. My thoughts on it, says Hotovy, and our data kind of backed it up in terms of monitoring guys' workload, is that we were afraid that the trip to Japan was actually going to deload guys. Our main guys went, and they only threw 2 games. So that's basically 9 days with only 2 games, which is significantly lower than what you would do in a normal spring training ramp up for this time of year. He goes on to say they may have great outings and feel, or they may not have great outings and feel like crap going through it. But the next day they're like, man, I needed that. They needed the higher workload to reset their body a little bit. So it's a little bit like ripping the Band-Aid off and getting through it, because, you know, you'll feel better on the back end and get your workload to the right place. And then finally he says, we feel good about Thursday. What's more concerning is what happens Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. Our starters aren't fully stretched out because we had one less start than you'd normally have, so you're probably at 80, 85 pitches instead of 90, 95. And then you have 7 days in a row to cover. That's going to put a strain on the staff in general to make sure we find the right answer to the equation to get the best guys in the game when we need to, but also not overload guys too early. Why are we doing this? Why? I mean, I know why they're doing it. It's the answer to the question most times you ask why, and you're talking about big corporate entities, money. That's why Major League Baseball and the NFL and the NBA send their product overseas to tap new markets and get into new pockets and purses and wallets. That's why they do it. But what are we doing here? So now your bullpen guys didn't get the workload to be stretched out in time for the regular season, and your starters didn't get the so now you're taking 10 pitches away from the starters likely on a given day. As he said, you're probably at 80, 85 instead of 90, 95. Now you have 10 more pitches or maybe another inning that your tired, not stretched out bullpen is going to have to cover. And that's just the tip of the iceberg when you talk about what it does to these guys and their routine and their prep to get ready for the regular season. But then you look at some of the specifics of what the Cubs are going to have to deal with in the opening month of their season. And I want to know just what the hell the Cubs did to the schedule makers for them to do this to the Cubs. Because you started the season in Japan. Messed up your body clocks, messed up your whole routine to get ready for the regular season. And then you come back and you have to play spring training, which is just weird. The Cubs are back in spring training now today was the last spring training game. Catch the opener right here on 670 The Score, your home for Cubs baseball Thursday night, as they take on the Diamondbacks. So you faced the Dodgers aces, and now you got to come back and face the Diamondbacks aces, who are, they're pretty good. Not bad when you're talking about the first two pitchers that the Diamondbacks or the D-backs are going to throw at the Cubs on Thursday and Friday. And on top of that, it's in Arizona. So they got to get their body clocks. Well, I guess they're doing spring training in Arizona, so that's kind of a break. Maybe their body clocks are already on Mountain Time, but either way, they're going to start the season on Mountain / West Coast time with the Diamondbacks and then the A's. And the A's are a little break in terms of, you know, competition. They're better than they have been in recent years, but a little break in terms of the competition that you're facing when you go from the Dodgers to the D-backs to the A's. But then, after that, you got to come back home, and after you've been on Tokyo time for a week or however long they were out there, and then you're on West Coast / Mountain time for a week to start the season in Arizona and Oakland, now you come home. And now this is just tradition. You're not going to do anything different, but they have a day game to open the season for their first game in Central Time at Wrigley Field Friday against the Padres, a week from Friday against the Padres. And then listen to this murderer's row that the Cubs have to deal with in the first month of the season. It goes Padres, Rangers, Dodgers, Padres, D-backs again, Dodgers, Phillies, Pirates. Between all the adjusting coming off the Tokyo trip and then through the West Coast and back home and what that does to your pitchers and probably what that's going to do to your offense as those guys try and find their legs and figure out where they are and what time it is. On top of that, you're facing basically the who's who of the National League with the World Series contending Texas Rangers peppered in between. What did the Cubs do to deserve this? Somebody tell me. 312-644-6767. What the hell did the Cubs do to deserve this? I'm not like charting these things, obviously, but I don't remember a team, especially not one that I follow closely, ever starting the season with a month this tough, both in terms of the schedule and the opponents that they're going to face, plus all the intangible factors that I just went through when you talk about the travel and the time change and what it does to these guys' routines. I don't know that I've ever seen a start of the season this hard for the Chicago Cubs. Now it gets easier. If they get through April, they get to May, and then it's a little bit easier. You got the Pirates, the Brewers, who are a good team, though. The Giants made some improvements. Then you got the Mets. Then you got Marlins, White Sox, Reds, Rockies, Reds. Like, it gets easier in May. But March going into April is just as brutal as I can ever remember a baseball team season starting, one that I follow closely. So my question to you, 312-644-6767, is what do you expect? What's fair to expect from the Cubs in the first month of the season? And is it, first of all, is it making excuses if I say, come out of that 500 and I'll be thrilled? Am I making excuses for this baseball team to not set a higher level or set a higher expectation when I look at everything I just laid out for you? Because that's really where I'm at. Get out of April at 500 and I am thrilled. But on the other hand, what scares me about that, Even if it is a 500 month, if they can't rebound in April or improve on that in May, I start thinking back to last year and just the way the season started in Tokyo and what I saw from that Cubs offense made me think of last year and have nightmares and flashbacks of the way that season played out, or especially the way that season started, where that team got off to such a bad start that even when they turned things around in the second half of the schedule, it was just way too little, way too late. I don't want this season to start the same way as last season, where you're trying to climb out of this huge hole that you've dug for yourselves to start the year. And you might be in that hole even with better play. Last year, that hole was because the offense couldn't get it going. The bullpen was just a mess, blowing 26 saves, and you didn't have enough offense or enough pitching to finish games and pull out wins. And by the time you figured out the formula to do that, the Brewers were, I don't know, 16, 17 games ahead of the Cubs, and I think finished winning the division by 10. this year you could play better. This year the Cubs could actually play a higher level of baseball, but with the competition that they're facing, have, I don't know, just as few or maybe less wins to show for it just because of who they're going against, just because of the strength of the schedule to start the season. They could be in that hole even if they play better baseball. And I know that sounds weird to say because you're going to look at the record and you're going to go, well, wins and losses look a lot alike from this year to last year. But in terms of what you see out on the field and the quality of baseball that we'll see them play, it might be better and it might not matter. They might find themselves in that same hole that they were in last year that they had to climb out of and couldn't climb out of. They made it close at the end, made a run at that wild card spot. But again, like I said, it was too little too late. So I'm hoping, and praying that they can come out of the month of April at 500. That would be outstanding. Much less than that, and again, I'm going to start having flashbacks to last season and wondering if it's going to play out the same way as what we saw last season. What's fair to expect from this Cubs team in the opening month? What are you expecting? 312-644-6767. Am I making excuses for these guys as they get ready to start the season on Thursday? And once again, you can catch Cubs baseball starting Thursday and every game right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Take your calls on that. Your text at 312-644-6767. Another Cubs thought I had in some breaking news that we saw today and some breaking news from the NBA that's going to sort of change the complexion of the Eastern Conference as we approach the playoffs. We'll talk about all that right after this. It's Rami Makhlouf with you on the Score Evening Show right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We're back live with more Rami Makhlouf on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
This Thursday, join Marshall Harris and Layla Rahimi at Wings and Rings on Halsted as they broadcast live from 10 to 2 from the Southside home opener. It's all brought to you by Yingling, America's oldest brewery. Wings, rings, baseball, beer. That sounds outstanding right now, quite honestly. I've been trying to drop a few pounds lately, Tyler, and I am permanently hungry and just angry. I don't know if you picked up on it in the show at all tonight. So when I do that read, I don't know how many words are in it. Really, all I see is wings, rings, Yingling, and baseball. That's all I see.
That's what catches my eyes, too. That's all I want.
I know I did the whole thing. I just read the whole thing, and I think I did a good job doing it. But all that really sticks out to me is wings, rings, Yingling, beer, and baseball. And I would be a very happy man, but I can't eat or drink those things right now. Most of the time, but you can with Marshall Harris and Layla Rahimi at Wing and Rings on Halsted as they broadcast live from 10 to 2 on Thursday. So go check them out. They're fun folks. Asking you right now, what's fair to expect? What do you expect from this Cubs team in what is a brutal, brutal April and start to the season? Between the Tokyo start to the series and what that does to a team's routine, and then coming back and starting the season out west and on West Coast time, and then coming home with a day game on Central time, and an absolutely silly schedule in terms of how strong it is, facing the D-backs and then the Padres and then the Rangers and then the Dodgers and then the Padres again and then the D-backs again and then the Dodgers again. And then, oh, here comes another World Series contender in the Philadelphia Phillies. It's daunting. It sounds daunting. And I'm afraid this team is going to get in the same type of hole that they got in last year. That was too deep to climb out of. Am I panicking? And what's fair to expect? 312-644-6767. I would take a 500 start. How about you, Dave in Westchester, who dialed that number and now is on the Score?
Hey. I think you're panicking right now. I know those are good teams, but it's a new day in baseball. We're a little bit better than we were last year, and I think we're going to come out strong. We got good pitching, we got good defense, and we got some good hitters as well.
I like your optimism, and they are better. I'm not going to say that they're not better. That'd be silly. That'd be silly for me to come on this radio station and say, and not just because, you know, where your broadcast home and partner with the Chicago Cubs and Cubs baseball. That's not why it would be silly. Not for my job security per se. You know what I mean? But it'd be silly because of what they did this offseason. Going and getting a Kyle Tucker is not nothing. And what they did with their bullpen with Presley at the back end and everything else that they did with the bullpen is not nothing. I'm not going to sit here and downplay those and say that's nothing. But, and I touched on this a little bit on Friday when I was talking about how that first series started and how it felt very familiar in terms of the offense not being able to scratch across runs. And when you look at that lineup, despite the addition of Kyle Tucker and how potent it is, I don't know how much more potent you can expect Kyle Tucker to make that lineup. Part of the reason Kyle Tucker was as potent as he was is because he was surrounded by studs, and that's not a knock on Kyle Tucker. Part of the reason they were successful is because they had Kyle Tucker in front of them or behind them, and what that does to a lineup. Or what that does to the way a pitcher approaches or attacks a lineup. Kyle Tucker comes here and he doesn't have that kind of protection or that kind of production around him. The reason Kyle Tucker and Ryan Pressly got the postseason experience they did was because in addition to being very good and contributing to their teams being very good, they were on very good teams. They were surrounded by really, really good players. And I talked on Friday about the Athletic. They ranked position players and put them into different tiers. And the Cubs had two players in the top four tiers, the top 80 players in Major League Baseball as far as position players go. The Cubs had two of the top eight in Kyle Tucker and Dansby Swanson. Tucker was in tier two and Swanson was in tier four. And then you get into five and you have an Ian Happ and you have a Suzuki. They had some of the young guys, Matt Shaw and Pete Crow Armstrong, and they're like tier five or tier six, which were 20-something regulars, guys who were in their 20s and playing every day, up-and-comers, if you will. So that's all promising. But as far as what it means for right now and what it means for this offense right now, I don't know that with the additions of Kyle Tucker and a rookie at third base and Matt Shaw, that we can expect great improvement from this offense, unless you're really counting on like another big jump for Pete Crow Armstrong or Miguel Amaya taking another step in his offense, building on what he did last year, and Matt Shaw probably having to be Rookie of the Year, like having to have the type of offensive season that wins him a Rookie of the Year award. That's what you're talking about if this lineup is going to be drastically better than it was last year. But if those three things or two out of those three things don't happen between PCA, Shaw, and Amaya, I don't know that adding Kyle Tucker is going to make everyone around him so much better that we can count on this offense being something much different than what we saw last year. And to back that up, piggybacking on their tiers article last week that I read and talked about on the show on Friday, they put out an article ranking offenses, lineups in Major League Baseball this year. And the Cubs are solidly in the middle of the pack at number 16, which I can't really argue with. When I look at the teams ahead of them, I can't really argue on them, despite adding Kyle Tucker, being a middle of the pack, mediocre, average, if you will, type of offense. There isn't one offense I look at that's ahead of them and go, oh, come on, the Cubs are better than them. They added Kyle Tucker this offseason. You could maybe argue the first couple that are ranked ahead of them. You got the Twins and the Blue Jays at 15 and 14. The Royals are at 13. The Astros are at 12. And then it goes Yankees, Orioles, Brewers, Red Sox, Padres, Phillies, Diamondbacks, Mets, Rangers, Braves, and the Dodgers at the top. There's not one team that you would look at and go, how'd they end up there? No, those are all lineups and offenses that are better and you can expect to be better and score more runs than the Cubs this year. And I just didn't want to be saying that coming into the year. And did you notice something? As I was reeling off all those lineups that are ranked ahead of the Cubs this season, a bunch of them you're going to see in the month of April. You're going to see a handful of those teams in the month of April. So this thing is tough, man. It's going to be tough this first month. And like I said, just get out of it 500, maybe even a couple games below 500, and I'll probably be happy and just hoping that they didn't dig too deep of a hole for themselves to start the season the way that they started last year. While we're on the subject of the Cubs and things that I'm scared of when it comes to the Cubs. So I've mentioned Kyle Tucker a few times in this segment already. acquired from the Astros in the offseason. Going the other way, one of the key pieces, probably the key piece for the Houston Astros going the other way, was Cam Smith, who the Cubs drafted in the first round in 2022, I believe it was. Yeah, 14th overall. No, it was just last year's draft. I'm sorry, I'm mistaken. He was taken 14th overall by the Cubs in last year's draft and then traded to the Astros for Kyle Tucker during the offseason. This dude is 22 years old and just made the Astros opening roster today. They announced that Cam Smith, the Cubs' first-round pick last year, they traded to Houston for Kyle Tucker, is gonna be on the opening day roster at 22 years old. I saw something today. He's played 30-some minor league games. But here's what terrifies me about that. I'll tell you with a question what terrifies me about that. Whose talent evaluation do you trust more at this point? The Chicago Cubs or the Houston Astros? Anybody? Anybody want to answer that? Tyler Buterbaugh, you're on the other side of the glass. Whose talent evaluation at this point do you trust more? The Cubs or the Astros?
I want to say the Cubs. Because
really?
I want to say the Cubs. But it's hard.
I want to, too. I want a lot of things, but it's just not reality.
But I'm going to have to go. I think I'm going to go with the Astros because.
Yeah, the Astros are one of those teams that when the Cubs made the trade, I was like, man, what are they seeing that the Cubs are not? They're just those teams that you, when you make a trade with them, you're like, even if it looks good on paper, like the Chiefs trading Joe Tooney to the Bears, there's a part of me that's like, wait a minute. Do they know something that the rest of us don't? Because they usually do. They usually do know things that the rest of us and that their competition and these teams that they're trading for, that they're trading with, don't. Now, yes, Kyle Tucker had a contract coming up, and so I'm not saying that they didn't think Kyle Tucker had a bright future in this league. They just saw a guy who was about to have to get paid, and the Cubs came a calling, and they were like, "You're offering us this guy?" This guy who at 22 years old, who after a few dozen games at the minor league level might be ready for the major leagues, you're offering us this guy. And now he is on their opening day roster, and that scares me a little bit. That scares me a little bit that the Astros see enough in this guy to put him on their opening day roster, because that's an Astros team who, yeah, they traded a lot of guys this offseason, and there's kind of a reset or of sorts going on there, but they're going to try to win in Houston. I don't think they're completely tanking and expecting to lose for the next few years. That's a team that's going to try to compete this year, and they just put this 22-year-old kid on their roster, and it's got me wondering again, what are the Astros seeing that I or the Cubs did not? Let's go back out to the phones at 312-644-6767. Let's go to the South Side. Marvin, you're on the Score. What's up, buddy?
Hey, you're spot on, man. The Cubs, listen, the lineup is not fearful enough. I'm sick of them every year. They think we're going to add one player and change that lineup. We play 29 games between Thursday and the end of April. And you said, will they be 500? I'll be ecstatic if they're 500. 12 and 17 is more likely for me. We don't have a lineup. We got one player that everybody is depending on to carry the lineup. He's going to make such a big change. And he's a good player, and you spot on. The Astros surrounded him with good players, especially, with that murdering lineup. And all the teams that we play, they have – all the teams in the league have at least two or three guys that you're fearful of. Who do we have that you're really fearful of in our lineup? Nobody.
Kyle Tucker, and that's it.
That's it. And so – we're expecting a lot. This is what we do to players, man. We bring them over here, and we expect them to be saviors when they've been, you know, decent role players. And even if they have been decent stars, they've been surrounded by stars. But we bring them over here, put them by themselves, and expect them to work a miracle, and it's just not going to happen. 12 and 17 by the end of April. You heard it here first. I'm telling you, that's going to be their record. And they're going to be digging out, trying to dig out of a hole for the rest of the year. Which is crazy, man. We can't hit the ball. You need to. What did they do with the Bellinger money? the Bellinger money. They traded Bellinger and didn't add anybody. They had already had Cal Tucker on their radar. They had enough. But what did they do with that money? They said they were freeing it up to add some pieces. That's all they did.
Marvin, I appreciate the call. They did add some arms to the bullpen with that Cody Bellinger money. But here's the thing. You didn't need that money to go and add those arms to the bullpen. Like, you have money. Don't cry poor to me, Tom Ricketts and the Chicago Cubs. You had that money. You could have added those arms and kept Cody Bellinger. And by the way, this is a team that right now doesn't really have a great handle on who their backup center fielder or first baseman is. Well, I guess Turner answered the first base question to some degree, but wouldn't it be nice if that was Cody Bellinger? Moving around the field, DH one day, center field, relieving PCA one day, first base. And by the way, are we 100% sold on Michael Busch at first base? Wouldn't it be nice to have a plan B if his second year isn't as good as his first year? Tyler, do I have time for one more call or should I break here? All right. You got a break. If you're hanging on, hang right there. I'll squeeze in some more Cubs calls after a short break. Also, we got some Bears talk that we got to get into in the 8 o'clock hour of the show and much, much more. Rami Makhlouf with you on the Score Evening Show right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.